Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I'm your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Today, we're going to ask the question, are you a Jeanette or are you a Joe? That sounds crazy, but when Jerry Schneider's involved, you never know what you're going to hear. So Jerry has this way of making us think one of two ways. He either makes us think deeply or he makes us smile, and he's going to do both of that today in his story. And then I'm going to share my thoughts on a Billy Graham quote, which is right up your alley.
Yeah.
You're a big Billy Graham fan.
Yeah.
And so we'll talk about that. And joining me for those stories and much more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. So I've come to the conclusion on a few things. So, you know, we've talked about nutrition, we've talked about sleep, we've talked about all these things. Well, I'm convinced 100% now that nutrition and consistency of sleep are cumulative.
Okay.
So the reason I'm saying that is you and I went to Maryland and Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back and was here a day or two, and then I went on a family vacation to the Smokies, and then I came home and I was home a day, and then I've been on a trip with our leadership team from Upward. And so basically for a week and a half, broken just a little bit, I have been not eating good. Notice I didn't say I couldn't eat good. I just didn't eat good.
Right.
You know, when you're out and you're – I haven't been sleeping good because I've been hotels and, you know, things like that. And I have been eating and sleeping very irregularly. I mean, you and I were eating dinner at 9 o'clock, 9:30 at night.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can really feel it.
Yeah.
I don't see how people do this all the time, travel for their job. So I got in the bed last night. I thought, man, I'm going to get some really good sleep. I didn't. And I'm convinced it's because it's a cumulative thing. It builds. And now it's going to take me a few days to kind of get back in a rhythm, which I'm a creature of habit anyway.
Yeah.
You know that. Everybody knows that.
That's probably why it affects you a little bit more than like it does me.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I got good sleep, or I slept long enough last night, but I just didn't get good sleep.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced it's a cumulative effect of the past, you know, 10 days or so. That's just,
it makes sense. It makes sense. Whenever I have a bad night's sleep, if I have a second bad night's sleep the day after, then it seems to snowball.
Yeah.
And continue to go. Whereas if I have one bad night and then the next night everything's good.
Yeah.
Then I get back on track. But yeah, so maybe that's the same thing.
It's been a fun 10 days or so, but man, I'm just ready to get back to my own bed and some consistency.
And relax a little bit into routine for sure. I got a big race this weekend.
You do? How are you feeling?
I thought I was feeling good, and I got on the track yesterday to do a workout, and I was so disappointed in that workout. And so I don't know. I was feeling really optimistic, and now I'm like, I don't know.
Well, you know, many times great races are preceded by bad workouts or the flu that you had back in. I'd found out yesterday that, or day before yesterday, I was talking to Brian in our IT, the guy that's over our IT department at Upward. His first half marathon was the 2013 Myrtle Beach Marathon.
Really?
He was there. Yeah.
Son of a gun.
Yeah. I said, well, I believe Dean won that. And so I pulled it up, and sure enough.
Yeah.
He was there. That was his first half marathon.
That's funny. I remember that day and watching the half marathoners peel off.
Yeah. He was talking about how he was glad that he was peeling off.
Yeah.
And not going out for a second, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was small world.
Yeah.
Well, so your race is when?
My race is Sunday.
So by the time this podcast comes out, it would already have happened.
Yep.
So any predictions? So this is the club.
No, this
is your 5K.
Yeah, the USATF 5K Masters Championship.
And your club national championship is when?
That's in January.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So, but this is a team race though. So yeah. We got a few guys from the Chattanooga Track Club that yeah. are going to go up there as an over 60 group and try to compete.
And this is where?
It's in Atlanta.
Oh, so okay. I'm hoping to go up there.
Yeah. I'm hoping to make it on the podium. That's my goal is to be on the podium. So we'll see. I feel like I've got to run under 18 minutes to be there. And yeah. I'm a little apprehensive about whether or not I could do that right now. So
you can do it.
We'll see. We'll see. You can do it. I'm hoping it's like I was, you know, when I was 55 and I ran that first 5K when I was 55 after not racing for a while. I really surprised myself at how fast I ran. I'm hoping that's going to happen again this time.
Yeah. So
we'll see.
Cool.
Well, our post of the week comes from Michelle Mitchiff. She says, sometimes we can fit our training in while we wait. Took my hubby for his MRI and ran around the parking lots. Day 4 of the couch to marathon. Gorgeous day to praise him and talk to some healthcare workers who were walking on their lunch breaks.
Great example of just getting it in.
Yeah, you know how much I love this. I love it because I do this kind of stuff all the time.
Sure.
And there is time for us to get in workouts a lot of times if we'll just be creative. Mm-hmm. The other thing you have to have a willingness to be a little sweaty in situations where maybe you don't, you're not appreciated. But otherwise, you can find this. You can find ways to do it. I've talked before. It's been a while since I probably talked about the, you know, I was taking my college cross country team. We were flying out to the West Coast for a national championship race. And we were in Atlanta. And of course, when you get a big group like that, you make sure you get there plenty early and make sure things are in order. Well, we got there plenty. We had a couple of hours waiting there at the gate. So I went for a run.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. The Atlanta airport's pretty big.
Yeah.
I did one loop and got 3 miles in.
Wow, really?
So, yeah. Now, I couldn't have done a 12-miler, I suppose, but I probably wouldn't have. But I got something in, and that's kind of what Michelle is talking about here. She got something in because you can squeeze it in sometimes.
Have I ever talked about the time I did a walk on a cruise ship, and I did every hallway and every corridor on the cruise ship.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
guess
wow.
how many miles that is?
It's a lot.
9 miles.
Wow.
9 miles. I probably went where I wasn't supposed to. I went down to the very bottom and I was like running past the, you know, they have like jail cells and
oh my goodness,
infirmaries and hospitals and everything in the belly of the ship. And people were looking at me very strange down there, and I think I wasn't supposed to be down there. But you know me. You just
act like you're supposed to be
there. Somebody will tell me if I'm not supposed to be down there.
That's right.
But I started at the very top, every corridor, every hallway, all the way down. It's like 13 stories. All the way down is 9 miles.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Great idea. Yeah. So the other thing, too, that people use a lot of times, they use the time excuse.
Yeah.
I don't have time. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. When you're saying, I don't have time, what you're saying is it's not important enough on my priority list. And there are a lot of things that we do.
Check out your screen time.
Yeah, check out your screen time. If you're sitting in front of the television watching an hour-long program, well, that's time you could have been doing something else.
Sure.
So make sure. Now, there are sometimes we don't have time. Sometimes we are very busy and we don't have time. And I get it. That happens. But make sure that's true before you utter those words that I don't have time.
Yeah, start your day. You say this all the time. Start your day with, it's not if, it's when. And if you'll think about it, when you get up in the morning, hey, I can fit this in right here.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you get to that point where you would normally be trying to fit it in, you're just not going to do it.
Right.
But if you decide that in the morning, you'll get it done.
You will. Our run of the week comes from Alora Page Adams. She said this, for the past week, I felt God telling me for this race, I should leave my watch behind and not use my phone or earbuds. Was I hearing right? At the last second, I grabbed my watch fresh off the charger, just in case. Drove close to an hour to get there and found the cute little Lutheran church that was hosting the event. The presence of God was tangible. Did a 1.7 mile warm-up, according to my watch, that I was supposed to leave behind. Minutes before the race was to begin, my watch battery died. Okay, Lord, I hear you. So the watch stayed in the car, and the phone and earbuds remained off. What a beautiful area with the foliage peaking. I had no idea what my pace was as I ran, but I listened for the ultimate coach telling me when to push it, when to slow down. It was a very hilly course. I came across the line around 9:37, so I estimated my time around 36 minutes. Just looked up my results at home, and I'm quite satisfied with that. Hebrews 12:1, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Forgot to mention, been sleeping great several nights in a row. Of course, last night I was awake all night with GI issues of all times. So I was so frustrated, but God said, as he often does, I will sustain you.
That's a great post.
Yeah. Yep. It's funny how God will give us those messages, the weird messages that make no sense. Mm-hmm. Why would you leave your phone, your earbuds, when that's what you normally do? Why would you need to do that? But and then sometimes he'll wink at you and do things like make your watch battery die.
Yeah.
Which is even better when that happens.
But it's so, if you don't do that, if you don't completely unplug at any point in your day, I encourage you to do that. I do it every morning. When I get up, I spend an hour. We've talked about that. But I don't have a phone. I have my watch to know what time it is. But I don't have my phone. And just getting rid of your phone for an hour a day is it's great.
Yeah.
You kind of stress about it the first few times you do it. You're like, you know, am I missing something? Is somebody looking for me? No, they're not.
Yep.
And you're not missing anything.
Yep.
Just enjoy the time with God, and you can really focus on God, because if your phone is laying there, I don't care if it's flipped upside down. I don't care if it's in your pocket. It's a distraction just by being there. So kudos to her for doing this.
So true. I like this idea of listening to the ultimate coach too.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things that I tend to always want to be the driver. That's why I teach my small group on Sunday mornings, is I like being the guy who's doing the leading of the group a lot of times. And so as a coach, you know, it's kind of built into me. But I like it when sometimes I can take a back seat and just take orders and just do what somebody else has planned. It's really enjoyable when you're driving most of the time. And so to me, that's why we should be so we should so easily let go and let God drive for us, because it just feels good to do that.
Yeah.
If we can do it.
Yeah.
And to your point, we get anxious when we do it, but
it's not if we can do it. It's we can do it. Yes. It's if we choose to do it.
That's right. That's right.
Just like getting those runs in. We can. We just have to choose to.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thanks for the correction. The trivia question from last week: how many times has the United States won the World Cross Country Championships? The short answer to this is the United States has won 11 team championships and 10 individual championships. But that's a little bit misleading, because we've never won the senior men's team title or the junior women's team title. Now, the senior women have won 5 times and the junior men have won 6 times. But the last time any of our teams won the World Cross Country Championships was way back in 1987. Hmm. It's been nearly 40 years since we have won. As a matter of fact, it's been, I think, that long. No, we had a group of men on the podium in 2011-ish, somewhere around there. Hmm. We had one group that ran really well. But other than that, it's a big drought.
Yeah.
We have on the senior side, we have 4. And when I say senior, that means the professionals. The juniors are under 20-year-olds. So 4 senior women's wins and 2 men's wins. And those came back to back. And then 5 junior men's. No junior women's podiums, either team or individual. So I don't know if we don't normally take a team or what happens there. But the senior titles is what really matters, and it's been since the 80s since we've done anything there. Now, I think that now the World Championships have been around since 1973. Back in 1973, the East Africans, the Kenyans, the Ethiopians, and the Ugandans who dominate the World Cross Country Championships now, they weren't really participating much at that time. And so that's why a lot of European teams and we were able to do better then than we do now. But I feel like we have a shot this year to get on the podium. The World Cross Country Championships this year in the United States, only the third time ever. And it looks like all the big players, all the big names in the United States that we have, they're all planning on running. I was listening to Connor Mance talk about it, and he was saying he's not sure if he can make the team. You know, if Connor Mance can't make the team, that's a stout team. Yeah. So I think we got a shot to do well this year. So we should at least be in the hunt. So it should be a lot of fun to watch. The qualifying races are in December. The championship race is in January. And it'll be really hard to break through those three powerhouses. But I think we have a shot. So we'll take a closer look at it as we get closer to that time. This is just kind of a teaser.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
Don't forget to submit your story. We need some more stories, and so we would love to share your story right here on this podcast. We're going to share somebody's story here in just a few minutes, and you want to be a part of that because somebody needs to hear your story. So please get on
that. I told you before the podcast, I was listening to Sue Evans and Melissa Lagana on the way home yesterday from out of town, and Melissa's story, man, it just rung my bell again.
Yeah.
That's the power of stories. We talk about, listen to, and dissect these stories week in and week out. And still, when I hear them, they still kind of rock my world. It doesn't matter how vanilla you think it is. We say this all the time. You may think it's just an unassuming story. It's not a big deal. Somebody needs to hear it.
Your
story.
Yes. So here is an interesting story. This past week, Mr. Beast, if you don't know who he is.
So who is he? I've heard this name. I've seen him on products. What is his claim to fame?
He's a YouTube guy. He has 450 million subscribers. 450
more people
million.
Than in the United States.
Yes. It's incredible. But anyway, so he got together. Apparently, he did more than just running. He did some other sports as well. But he got Melissa Jefferson Wooden, who is the person who won both the 100 and the 200 at the World Championships and has one of the best sprinting years ever this past year. And at the University of North Carolina, she lined up with 100 men on the sideline of a soccer field and raced across two soccer fields. And she beat all 100 men. And the deal was, if anybody could beat her, they got $100,000. So that's a pretty big incentive.
Yeah.
Well, one guy was probably ahead of her at one point. Came within like a tenth of a second. And it was a neat thing to watch. Mr. Beast does all of it. He did something with Noah Lyles here a couple of months ago, and another guy that challenges people and is a YouTube guy, and got them together, and there was money involved in that one as well. And so he does some good stuff, some interesting stuff. And I mean, that's why he's got 450 million subscribers, because he does stuff that's interesting.
That's insane.
But I thought this was a cool story. What was bad about it, I guess, depending on how you look at this. It really depends on how you look at this. when they got through, they said number 35. He was. They were all wearing numbers on their shirts, and the guy was wearing number 35. And he goes over to number 35. He says, "Number 35, you look good. You came pretty close." Said, "Are you a track athlete?" He was like, "No." And that was it. You know, it's like he wasn't even a runner. And he nearly beat the fastest woman in the world.
Wow.
And so a lot of people look at that and go, well, you know, she's not that special. Well, I beg to differ with that. Yeah. I saw a video of a track coach who's kind of breaking this down. He didn't like it that she did this because he feels like women's sports are their own thing. And us trying to mix men's and women's sports together is it's like putting two different things together. And I agree with that. Although I think,
but I don't think that's what this was.
I don't think it was
a challenge.
And I think so too. And I think it was good. I think ever since, do you know about Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs? Mm-mm. Back in the early 70s, Billie Jean King was the best tennis player, female tennis player in the world. And a guy named Bobby Riggs, who was kind of a semi-pro, he wasn't much of a player, but he was like 40 something years old or something, but he challenged Billie Jean King to a match and Billie Jean King beat him.
Yeah.
And that ever since then, we've been obsessed with this idea of bringing men and women together and women trying to beat the men. But that's not what this is. This is more about let's have some fun.
Yeah,
Yeah. And I think we should be celebrating women for being women and doing things
and
that women
the challenge,
do.
Yeah.
Sure. And so it was a really neat thing to do. I'm sure she got a big payday out of this, which was great for her.
Yeah.
And we still know that Melissa Jefferson Wooden is the fastest woman alive. And there's no question about it. Well, our buddy Jerry Snyder is on the docket again today. And he's talking about being positive, which is sort of the way that he is and the thing that he talks about more frequently than anything else. This one is called, Are You Jeanette or Are You Joe? Things turn out best for those who make the best of the way things turn out. That's from John Wooden, the legendary basketball coach. Mary Mapes Dodge, born 1831, is best known for a children's novel she wrote called Hans Brinker and the Silver Skates. It was translated into several languages and became a bestseller. Many years later, the story made its way to Hollywood and became a Disney movie. Mary also wrote poetry, and in my opinion, this is one of her best. It has a lesson for all of us. Jeanette and Joe. Two girls I know, Jeanette and Joe, and one is always moping. The other lassie, come what may, is ever bravely hoping. Beauty of face and girlish grace are theirs for joy or sorrow. Jeanette takes brightly every day, and Joe dreads each tomorrow. One early morn, they watched the dawn. I saw them stand together. Their whole day's sport, 'twas very plain, depended on the weather. "'Twill storm," cried Joe. Jeanette spoke low. "Yes, but 'twill soon be over." And as she spoke, the sudden shower came beating down the clover. "I told you so," cried angry Joe. "It's always a-raining." Then hid her face in dire despair, lamenting and complaining. But sweet Jeanette, quiet, hopeful yet, I tell it to her honor, looked up and waited till the sun came streaming in upon her. The broken clouds sailed off in crowds across a sea of glory. Jeanette and Joe ran, laughing in, which ends my simple story. Joy is divine, come storm, come shine, the hopeful are the gladdest. And doubt and dread, children believe, of all things are the saddest. In morning's light, let youth be bright, take in the sunshine tender. Then at the close shall life's decline be full of sunset splendor. And ye who fret, try like Jeanette to shun all weak complaining, and not like Joe cry out too soon, it always is a-raining. And that brings us to a very important question. Are you Jeanette or are you Joe? Is the glass before you half empty or half full? The famous British statesman Winston Churchill liked to point out, a pessimist sees the difficulty in every opportunity, an optimist sees the opportunity in every difficulty. I heard a story long ago about a man who fell out the window of a very tall building. As he passed by each window on his way to the ground, he said to the people watching him, "I'm all right so far." So it's true. The pessimist may prove to be right in the long run, but the optimist is sure to have more fun on the way. Why not choose to believe the best about people and circumstances, beginning with yourself? First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt liked to say, "The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams." Attitude really is everything.
It's a great story, Jerry, as always.
Yeah.
Man, how true is this?
It's so true. It's so true. What's funny is after I read this story, having written the story that I wrote for this week, these go together. So it's always fun to watch God put these things together and how these stories go together. It's pretty cool.
So I think I'm Jeanette, but there are times when I have to fight off Joe.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
'Cause you can get in those slumps and everything turns gloomy, but I think I'm pretty good at, usually I have to talk things out.
Yeah.
You know, if I just keep it into myself, it's like I slowly become Joe. But the minute I get to somebody, usually it's my wife that I'll just dump it on, and we'll go for a walk and I'll talk and I'll dump all this stuff out. And by the time it's over, I'm like, okay, I'm Jeanette again.
She's got you straightened up.
Yeah.
And you know, the truth is we all have a choice.
Sure.
Of being Jeanette or Joe. We really, really do have a choice. And it really is that simple. You know, when we look at the Bible, when you look at Paul, mm-hmm. I mean, Paul was in jail and he chose to be happy and to do positive things regardless of the fact he was in jail. I mean, how much worse can it be than being in jail?
Well, and I think the cool thing about believers is, and I went back up to see exactly what it says the hopeful are the gladdest. We have a hope that can't be taken away.
That's right.
And that's the cool part. We can... The minute we start feeling like Joe, all we got to look back to is we have the ultimate hope. We yep. win the game in the end, no matter what happens to us during the game. Just like Jerry, he talked about the lady, Eleanor. Who did he talk about falling down the building? It's like, I'm okay. I'm okay. Yeah, I'm
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And we can do that because we know that when we ultimately hit the dust, there's a pillow at the bottom.
That's, yeah.
And we've got eternity with Christ. So that's... I don't know if that's what this story was trying to parallel to, but to me, that's what I saw.
Yeah, absolutely.
This story.
Absolutely. And this parallels well with running.
Sure.
Because the more positive you are, the better your running goes. It's just that simple. Mm-hmm. The faster you run, the better you run, the better you feel. I've even noticed that that people who are negative, I feel like, tend to be injured more than people mm-hmm. who are positive. And I think maybe part of that comes from the relaxation that you get from being positive. I think
sure.
when you're more positive, you're typically more relaxed. And I think the tenser you are, the more likely you are to have injuries and issues like that. So
yeah.
it's a big deal. You just, the woe is me attitude. And the woe is me, I mean, we're in the victim Olympics these days. You know, everybody wants to
Never
talk.
Never heard it put that way, but that's dead on. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody wants to talk about how tough things are for them.
Sure.
And, you know, everybody's got their toughness. Everybody's got their thing they have to overcome. And some people, it's harder than others.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give them that. But dwelling on it, not good. It's never going to be good. It's never going to help you to dwell on negative things. And you just have those people. I remember there was a guy that I ran into this past weekend who, he's negative all the time. And he's not a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I ran into him for the first time. I hadn't talked to him in, I don't know, over a year probably. And we started talking. We were talking about a positive thing, mm-hmm. something that was really, really positive in his life. But it turned south quickly. And
yeah.
he went into that negative thing. And I thought, I don't want to be around him. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And I don't want to be that person people don't want to be around. But when you're, and then, of course, what happens is that just, now when people try to avoid you, then you tend to become more negative.
Sure.
Because people are avoiding
yeah.
you. So it just snowballs and
yeah.
gets worse.
And I think a lot of it is, I mean, this is garbage in, garbage out. I feel like some of the most joyful people are the ones that they don't watch a lot of TV. They don't watch a lot of news. they don't look at social media a lot. I think in our day, I mean, you said it's the, what did you say, the Olympics?
The victim Olympics.
The victim Olympics. That perpetuates that.
Yeah.
Because that's, if it bleeds, it leads on the news. And if it's bad and gloomy, that's what they run with. And they don't put out the happy, good stuff. And for that reason, I mean, that affects us.
Yeah.
And we have the choice whether to watch that, to listen to that, to put ourselves in those situations. That's a choice we have. Yeah. And so if that really does affect you, and it can for me.
Yeah.
That's why I have this, you know, 8 times out of 10, social media is not on my phone.
Yeah.
And those 2 times out of 10, I realize why I like that 8 times out of 10. Yeah. So, I mean, sure. It's not on there now, but, you know, a couple weeks ago it was on there. And it's like, but that's the first step, is understanding what makes you become, is it Joe?
Yeah.
Joe. Because we all have Joe in us. She's in there. In yep. all of us, yep. But it's yep. it's our choice whether to let her rear her ugly head or not.
That is 100% true. Yep. Yeah. And what's so bad about things like social media and the news and things like that, particularly in politics, it's so bad because somebody will do something that is objectively good. Just on its face, it's objectively a good thing. And people will just tear that person down to find something negative and bad about why that thing is bad, even though it's clearly a good thing.
Yeah.
And that just tears me up.
Well, and I think we have to be honest with ourselves about the things that get us in those positions. You know, we talk about, you know, it's cool to use the sleep app now, because we've talked about in the past, it's not saying we shouldn't eat that dessert after that meal. What it does is it shows us the idea, if I do this, it's going to result in this.
Mm-hmm.
And a good example is my uncle. He was with us on this trip to the Smokies, this family trip. And he's one of those that drinks coffee. I mean, 9 o'clock at night, he's drinking coffee. And he's like, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't yeah. bother me. But we were all staying in this house together, and one particular night there was some rowdy teenagers or a party going on in a house behind us, and I got up twice that night. Both times I got up, he's sitting in the living room, and I'm like, Jim, it affects you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's like, oh, it's not the coffee. Okay. And so that's one of those things that if social media – If you're ill all the time after looking at social media or watching the news, be honest with yourself.
Yeah.
That is causing this. It's not saying you shouldn't look at social media.
Sure.
It's saying you need to understand what's going to happen as a result of that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Philippians 4:11-13, I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in health or in want, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. We don't usually get this verse in context like that. Normally, we just get the last part there,
sure.
And it's way better in context. And I had a situation this week that showed that I'm making progress in this area. This whole idea of being okay in whatever situation. So I mentioned I'm going to this race this weekend. Well, when I booked my hotel room, and like a few minutes after booking my hotel room, I wanted to see how close is the hotel to the race site. I figured it was really close enough to walk, but I wasn't sure. So I went in to check it. Well, guess what I found out when I went into the race site? After booking my hotel on Friday night, I found out for the Saturday morning race, I found out that the race is Sunday morning.
Oh.
So I booked it on the wrong night. So I called the hotel. Well, I booked it through a third party. You know how that works when you do that. And so in the past, when they're telling, while I'm on hold for 14 minutes.
You're about to get transparent here, aren't you?
Yeah. I was on hold for 14 minutes, and I finally got somebody, and they immediately transferred me to somebody else to be on hold for a little longer. Mm-hmm. And I get there, and the guy says, while I'm on hold, I'm checking the website, and the website says, we can't help you on this third party people, you need to contact the hotel because we booked the thing through the hotel. So you need to contact them. And we'll help you if you need to get in touch with them. But I'm already in touch with them. I've got them on the phone. Well, guess what they told me as soon as I got them on the phone?
You have to deal with a third party.
You have to deal with a third. So it's like, I'm like, whoa, hold on a second. They're telling me the exact opposite. Anyway, I finally got this really nice lady who had a British accent. She had a beautiful accent. Yeah. But she was telling me that I can't help you. I can't do anything. We can't change anything. You're going to need to talk to a manager to fix it. And normally, in the past, I would have just flown off the handle and gotten just, I would have been belligerent, demanded that they change. I don't know what, I would have done something though, and I wouldn't have been happy about it. And I was like, all right, I made this bed. Mm-hmm. It was my fault, not theirs. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm out this money, then I'm just out this money and it's my fault. And, So I call them back the next day, which is, this was on Sunday, so there wasn't any managers around. So I call her back on Monday, and sure enough, I get the same nice lady, and she immediately transfers me over. They change it quickly, and I got off the phone, and Debbie goes, "Wow, you handled that well." She was impressed, which was good,
yeah.
Because like I said, what it shows is I'm doing a lot better at being content in every situation.
Sure.
Because God is working on me. And so it's a small miracle. What God has done in my life was amazing. So
that's good to hear.
Yeah, it feels good to go through that way. All we can do is make the most of our situation, whatever it is. And I'm convinced that God intervenes and helps us if we'll just listen for him while he's trying to help us. So Proverbs 3:5-6, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all ways, acknowledge him and he will direct your path. This one's really hard for people like you and me because we're like, we want to do something.
But we want to understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Usually that's it for me is I just want to understand. You know, help me understand this.
Yeah.
It's when you get on the phone with somebody, things not going your way. Help me understand this. And it's our lack of understanding that often gets us very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And this this idea of in all ways acknowledge him means we have to let go of control. And this the idea of lean not on your own understanding means give up control.
Yeah. Well, it's why I often... Like if I'm, and I have to be careful how I pray this, especially in situations where there's family around. But, you know, like if somebody's dealing with a health issue and it's not looking good, I did, with Eldon just a few weeks ago, my prayer in the hospital room for him was, you know, it wasn't looking good. He was given basically a death sentence. And you pray, God heal him. But if you choose not to, comfort us, help us understand, help us see you in this situation. Mm-hmm. Because so many times that's when we go to blaming him.
Yeah.
Because it's not the way we want it to happen. And sometimes we just don't understand. With Eldon, there was people, because of his salvation right there at the end, that whole family, I have no doubt, is being radically transformed because of what God did in his death.
Yeah.
And but so many times we don't want to acknowledge him. We want to get mad at him. And but God's got a handle on all this. This is not the end of the story. Eldon's life in that hospital bed was not the end of the story. By far it wasn't. But we have to have that eternal perspective sometimes, but that's so hard to understand.
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is. And back to Jerry's whole premise here is it's way easier to be on the right side of that equation when you're positive versus when you're negative. When you're negative, you want to blame God. You want to think, oh, the worst is going to happen. And you won't even notice the fact that the family is impacted because you're just busy focusing on the negative thing.
Yeah. I firmly believe that if you would have flown off the handle, if you would have been the dean of 10 years ago on that phone call, you probably wouldn't have got that room moved.
Probably not.
But they acknowledged, hey, this guy's being understanding. But it's usually how we react to things ultimately determines what outcome is there. It's not the other people usually. Yeah. As much as we want to blame them, you know, this was their fault. And you said, no, this was my fault.
Yep.
When you go in with that countenance and that attitude, people act differently towards you.
Yeah, for sure. Romans 8:28, and we know that all things work together for good to them who love God, to them who are called according to his purpose. This is one of my favorite verses, and this is the verse that I lean on. For me, when things aren't going well, this is the verse to me that just shouts in my head. Because, you know, you look at, you mentioned Elton. Well, look at Charlie Kirk, something that everybody knows about and probably felt to some degree. It was horrible for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. And we can focus on all the horrible things and the reasons why that was so bad. And there are many. But there are people today who have found Jesus because Charlie Kirk was murdered. Mm-hmm. And although that doesn't out, we'd still rather have him here. Mm-hmm. But it's a good thing that came from it. And if you're not positive, back to Jerry's premise, if you're not positive, you're going to miss that. You're just going to completely, it's just going to go right over your head. You're not even going to see it. When things don't go well, ask God, what are you trying to tell me? Hmm. Or God, how are you going to use this? You know, it goes back to that when I was laying in bed, the day that I missed that day of running. Hmm. You know, for most people, if they missed a day of running, they wouldn't think much of it. To me, it was devastating.
Yeah.
And it was stupid because I was a dummy that I missed that day of running for no good reason. Mm-hmm. And you want to fix those things, and you can't fix those things.
Sure.
And so you're like, well, and you feel so inadequate. You feel so, but what I did was I took a step back and I thought, okay, God, what are you trying to tell me? And he told me some beautiful things in that moment. A lot of times, if we'll just take a step back, just pause for enough time to ask the question, God, what are you trying to do and what are you trying to accomplish here? He'll reveal it to you.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Take inventory. Are most of your friends Jeanette or Joe?
Ooh. I think I'm drawn to the Jeanettes.
Yeah.
I don't have patience for, and I have them, the Eeyores in my life.
Yeah.
You know, everything's bad. Everything's, you know, I'm drawn to, and that's just the thing, is the Jeanettes are just more attractive people.
Yeah.
And the Joes in your life, they're just not attractive. And I'm saying that lovingly because I can be Joe sometimes. I'm not attractive sometimes when I get in one of my moods. But I thank God that he's, through the years, it's not that I don't get in those moods. It's I realize I'm being a Joe quicker than I used to.
Yeah, that's a good way
to put it. It's not saying you won't ever be a Joe. We're all Joe sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Even the nicest of people, they've got their moments.
But, yeah.
I think most of my friends are Jeanette, but I think God keeps some of those Joes in our life to keep us in check. Because a lot of times you see that Joe in your life and you're like, I acted like that last week. How bad? I mean, and so sometimes you see a mirror.
Yeah.
When you're looking at Joe.
Yeah, it's like, true. Hey. That's a good way to put it. I thought about it from the opposite side.
Yeah.
So I have both, probably more Jeanettes than Joes, but I think it's important that we have Joes in our life for the opposite reason. So you know, I think about my friend John Bagley. John Bagley's gone to meet the Lord now, but John, I don't care who, when he met somebody, I don't care what faults they had. He was going to find the most positive thing about him, and that was the thing that was going to come to the forefront for him. He was positive about everything. Well, he taught me a lot. I learned from him watching the way that he dealt with people, and he had an impact on me. Mm-hmm. Well, we can have an impact on others.
Sure.
And I think it's important that we do have an impact on others because people who are Joes are never going to become Jeanettes unless they hang out with Jeanettes.
Yeah.
And so it's really, really important for us to almost mentor those people. Mm-hmm. You know, they say you're the average
of
the five people.
You're the sum of the total people you hang around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so if all the Joes, if those five people that they're hanging around with the most, if they're all Joes, well, then they're never going to become anything but a Joe. And so, but if you're one of those five and you're a Jeanette, well, that increases the chance that that Joe can become a Jeanette.
Yeah, if you hang around five Joes and three Jeanettes, you're a sum total of a negative two Joe.
Yeah.
And I mean, that is how it works. Yep. I mean, because it's cumulative. It does, if you're just around negativity all the time, which is what social media is, by and large.
Yeah.
And the news. Yeah. If you're just constantly in that soup, it's not saying you shouldn't go to it.
But yeah.
If your screen time's 8 hours a day, you're gonna be more of a Joe than you are a Jeanette.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking about this, and I hadn't given this much thought, but the algorithms on the short video type thing, like the TikToks and the YouTube Shorts and things like that. If you'll note it, if you'll pull up those videos and watch them, you'll figure out whether you're a Jeanette or a Joe.
See, I don't watch those.
See, I do. Yeah. But what I notice is I get a lot of positive messages because mm-hmm. those are the ones I like mm-hmm. and it knows I like those. So it feeds me more of those. Mm-hmm. And if most of your feed is negative things, mm-hmm. well, the chances are that's where your brain is.
Yeah.
So it may be a good indicator.
A few times I have watch those, I look up and it's been 30 minutes.
I know that's why I don't do it often.
I don't purposely watch them. I go to the stationary post, whatever you call it. This is the feed.
Yeah.
And I'll scan through there. But even that, it's like here recently, you'll see five ads to every one of your friends, something. Yeah. Which that's not why I'm on there.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, full disclosure, this week's Dean's Thoughts came from one of those short videos.
Really?
So, yeah, that's where I got the idea for the Dean's Thoughts. So,
yeah.
they can be useful.
Yeah, they can be. They can.
What do you say to the Joe that tries to rain on your parade and put down your dreams?
I think I'm pretty, I can be pretty harsh here. And I know I can, and I don't have any patience, and probably to a fault, to people trying to be a Joe when I'm trying to be a Jeanette about something. Now there's constructive criticism, which I can handle that, but it's when somebody's trying to just dig on me or be a Joe in my life, I probably react too harshly in situations. Like I said, not constructive criticism. If it's somebody that I trust and is close to me, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But when it's somebody online or, you know, like we have the people even in this ministry who will get the email messages or and it's like, I'm not going to say that. They're just the Joes. And it's why you and I don't do what Holly does. You know, Holly is kind of the customer service end of the running of Upper Running, and she handles the Joes much more lovingly than you or I do.
Yep.
I don't know. I need to work on that. That's a place I need to work, but because I tend to justify it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not justified the way I react sometimes.
Yep. And I'm the same way. I do think we have to have a dogged determination to stay on whatever that positive path is. You know, man, I don't want to talk about politics, but I do want to talk about politics right here. And here's what I want to bring up. This whole peace deal in the Middle East is a big deal.
Yeah.
It is a big deal. And like him or hate him, Trump made that thing happen. And he made that thing happen because Trump
and a lot of Democrats are saying the same thing to their credit.
Yes, to their credit for sure. The reason that they got there was because Trump would not allow the negativity mm-hmm. to permeate all of that. When Netanyahu said something, he said, "You're so negative." That's what he said directly to Netanyahu. Why are you so negative?
Yeah.
And It's because he didn't, he's like a dog with a bone when it comes to those things. And I think that when we're doing things and we know we're on the path that God has for us, whatever that thing is, maybe it's running related, maybe it's work related, maybe it's personal related, whatever that thing is, that, and you know that God has you on that path, don't let people come in. And when somebody says to you, tries to bring you down, just look at them and go, why are you so negative? You know, and just keep going, because God's got you on that path for a reason. And sometimes he throws that negativity in there for a reason too. And sometimes it's to motivate us a little bit. And I think when somebody tells Trump he can't do something, I think it motivates him.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, just, man, get in there like a dog with a bone and go after it, whatever that positive thing is.
Yeah. If it's something God's laying on your heart, absolutely.
Yeah.
The thing we got to be careful of, make sure it's something God's laying on your heart. Right. Make sure if you haven't prayed about it, you better pray about it.
Yeah, for sure. Last question. How can you make yourself more of a Jeanette and less of a Joe?
Get the Joes out of your life. Be a net positive. If you've got 5 Joes in your life, make sure you got 10 Jeanettes.
Yeah, that's the bottom line.
Because you can't get rid of them, nor should you. Yeah. To your point earlier, we can be a light in the lives of the Joes. But, you know, it makes me think of the, are you a thermometer or are you a thermostat? You know, if you can be a thermostat where you set the temperature of the room, or you can be a thermometer which only reflects the temperature. And if you've got too many Joes in your life, you're going to become a thermometer.
Yeah.
The Joes are going to start to change you.
Oh, that's a good point. Well, I thought about it from this standpoint. I think love, period, love. I'm going to give you an example. There's a guy that I know who, so many people avoid him because he talks a lot. Everybody knows that person that just talks a lot. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's off-putting, and sometimes he's not necessarily a Joe. He's not a negative person, but he's somebody who you don't, you know, those people you don't want to get stuck talking to, is the way people put it. But I look at him differently. Mm-hmm. The first thing I think is I feel bad that some people feel that way about him, first of all, because he's got a good heart. And what I do is I look at the positive aspects of him. The man's in his 80s. Mm-hmm. It's amazing that somebody in their 80s does the things that he does. And so I choose to look at those positive things. And that's just the love that I have for this man. And I think that if we are going to change the attitudes, we need to pass that kind of a mindset along to everybody. Because if we all loved all of the people around us as Jesus commanded us to do, then we wouldn't have a bunch of Joes, because everybody would be affected by it, because almost everybody would be a Jeanette and everybody would be affected by it, and it would lift all, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats in that case. So, you know, I look at it like this. No matter what Debbie does, it's positive. Mm-hmm. I don't care what she does.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, she can't do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. Why? Well, because I love her. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to interpret everything she does as positive, period. Mm-hmm. End of story. Well, what if I looked at everybody that way?
Yeah.
Then I would look at everything. How radically could that change the world?
Yeah. We're very quick to prescribe motives, and that typically is to our demise, not that person.
That's right. Upward Running is the best way to stay motivated for your fitness and faith journeys. You get these weekly podcasts, but there's so much more. We have proven training plans available for you, whether you're just at the beginning of your fitness quest or you've been running for 20 years. We have something for everyone, and it doesn't matter where you are with God either. We have something for you there too. If you're not a member, join today at upwardrunning.com. It is the best value you'll find to fuel both your faith and your fitness. All right, we're back, and this is an interesting article right here. It says, the best training plan according to science. How to increase your VO2 max by 44% in 10 weeks. Now imagine that, okay?
And this is written by Steve Magnus, I see.
Yes.
Which is...
a serious scientist.
I'm giving some credibility here, but still, I think it's... I feel like it's clickbait from the outset.
Here's what it says. What if I told you there was a research-backed training program that resulted in a 44% increase in VO2 max in just 10 weeks, that you would improve linearly, getting better every week, and that this program only took 40 minutes a day, and that amateurs with little training background could do it? Sign me up, right? So he shares this graph where clearly... that's exactly what it shows. It shows a linear improvement on VO2 max for 10 solid weeks in a row. There's just one problem with this study. The results obtained were true. Improvement was massive, but everyone was just surviving. What they found was that this particular study had people doing this. This was kind of a typical week. On Monday, run 40 minutes as hard as you can. On Tuesday, you do cycling where you do 6 times 5 minutes at VO2 max with 2 minutes rest in between. Wednesday, back to the 40 minutes. Thursday, back to the 6 times 5 minutes. Basically, you're alternating days and you're going hard every single day, hard as you can go. And it works. Do this for 10 weeks, your VO2 max will increase. The problem is you can't keep doing this. And we tend to think that the way that he puts it is we tend to think that overtraining is always just around the corner. And if we do just a little bit more, we go a little bit faster, our performance.
I don't say overtraining is just around the corner.
You don't say that?
No. I mean, yeah.
But a lot of people do.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've always leaned more on the side of more intensity. You know, from our background.
Yeah. Which you can do in triathlon because...
which he was alternating here, though.
He was. He was alternating here. But it was still only two. If you added in some swimming, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, they all got better, and only one person in this group reported a minor injury. But here's the problem, and this is the point behind what the point he's making here is that most research studies on training programs are poor. Mm-hmm. And this is a poor study because, yeah, sure, it shows that you'll improve. And it's true. You mm-hmm. will improve. But it's also a recipe for disaster in the long run. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem, is that many of these studies that we find, when people have this new thing that comes out, yeah, they did some studies. They showed that it helped. But the problem is it's not something you can sustain. And in this case, this was something where all of these people that were in this study, only one of them chose to continue doing it. He did it for 3 more weeks. And that was it. Because nobody could keep doing that because you're killing yourself every day and there's no joy in it. It's just not good for you mentally or physically. And I don't know. I thought this was really interesting. I'd never seen this before. I never saw this study before. But we can hammer ourselves to the point to get better. Mm-hmm. But at what cost, I guess, is the question. So, you know what I thought of when I read this was people who start running mm-hmm. and they're not using our program when they start running. This is what they do.
Yeah.
Right? They go out and they run as far as they can. And then as soon as they have to stop, they stop. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, they go out and they try to run as far as they can again. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, they do it again. And eventually that leads to burnout. Mm-hmm. And it leads to the point where they quit because it's not enjoyable and or they wind up injured. But... it doesn't work. It's not sustainable. And that's what happens with a lot of these things where we get studies that show that something helps. Yeah, this thing may help. But is that thing something that you can continue to do?
Yeah. I think again, I think this is where AI is going to be a game changer. I think it's going to take, I mean, because it's obvious that if you do more, faster, harder, you're gonna get objectively better, because VO2 max is a pretty objective measurement. Mm-hmm. The key is to find how to do that without reaching the point of burnout or injury. And we have very subjective measurements of that in the past in training. But if you take all the objective data points, VO2 max, heart rate variability, resting heart rate, training load, all these things that can be studied from a medical standpoint, and you combine that with the subjectivity of training, and then you look at billions of data points, which we can't do, we don't have the capability of doing, but AI does. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah,
it is. It's very interesting.
It is.
Over the next few years. Because I do think there's something, I keep saying that science is, or AI is going to tell us that it's better to do, you know, three long runs in a week. That's an example. I think there's going to be something like that is going to go counter to everything we've thought in the past. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's we rest. Maybe its training blocks should be 9 weeks on, 1 week off, or something crazy like that.
Yeah,
because it's going to be getting us closer to that rivet, which is what everybody tries to do, but nobody has ever mastered. I think AI is going to get us closer to that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I remember reading the book Running with the Buffaloes, mm-hmm. and it's a story about a particular season with the Colorado cross-country team. And I remember reading and watching and thinking about their training was brutal. Mm-hmm. I mean, brutal. It was like they were running fairly hard almost every single day. And I thought, I don't know how those guys could hold up. But a cross-country season is only a limited amount of time. And so their bodies can hold up mm-hmm. to that. And so I guess it makes reading this study, that made sense. But what happens is a lot of those guys – they don't run after college because they're just completely burned out because mm-hmm. they're miserable.
Sure.
So, yeah. Interesting. Well, it's time for Dean's Thoughts, and that's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. I was listening to a Billy Graham sermon recently, and this quote hit me hard. It really is something I've thought about a lot over the past year or so. This is called, "Comfort without conviction is spiritual sedation." Billy Graham once said, comfort without conviction is spiritual sedation. It is still a powerful warning today, directed at churches that avoid challenging their congregations, opting instead to make everyone feel good while sidestepping the harder work of confronting sin and discomfort. And when we reflect honestly on the state of our physical health as a society today, it is clear that Graham's principle applies just as sharply in the realm of wellness and physical fitness. Let's be honest. Comfort can be deceptive. There's a tendency in our culture to redefine what is healthy to something that is more comfortable than it really is. There is an increasing push to celebrate all bodies as healthy, regardless of habits, and encourage people to accept themselves without striving for improvement. Obesity is a major health risk, and it's often downplayed. People are told there's no reason to lose weight or adopt healthier habits because it would be uncomfortable to do so. The world of health has shifted dramatically, moving away from the once popular no pain, no gain philosophy to a culture that says, don't do it if it hurts. Society tells us that eating in chain restaurants is perfectly acceptable, despite well-documented health risks. Meanwhile, those who make thoughtful, disciplined choices, like fueling their bodies with plant-based, nutrient-rich foods, for example, are often mocked or dismissed as obsessive. The excuse that healthy eating is too expensive is used by many, even though evidence shows that, with planning, nutritious eating is within reach for just about anyone in this country. Other healthy things, like good sleep, is also downplayed, as a lack of sleep has become a dubious badge of honor. In addition, the older age Older age is regularly used as an excuse for inactivity and sedentary habits. It is undeniably uncomfortable to run or even simply to walk for fitness, especially when you're just beginning. So just like all the other trends away from difficult things, the idea of purposefully doing something uncomfortable is just, well, uncomfortable. And because life seems to be all about making ourselves more comfortable, it is hardly a thing to be considered at all. Running and walking, it seems, is countercultural, but also an undeniably good thing to do. So, I am here to say it is important to tell the truth. It is not good to be unhealthy. Obesity remains one of the most serious risk factors in modern health, linked to a staggering array of chronic diseases and reduced quality of life. Just to be clear, though, I'm not saying that thinness automatically equals health or that higher weight always means poor health. In reality, as any honest observer will admit, healthy people come in a range of shapes and sizes. There are lean people who are physically unfit and metabolically unhealthy, and there are larger individuals who are fit, active, and in excellent health. What matters is not fitting into a single body type, but rather inhabiting a body marked by real wellness, that is, strength, mobility, energy, endurance, and sound metabolic function. Excusing unhealthy behavior out of a desire for comfort leads only to physical sedation, the same numbing effect Billy Graham warned against in the spiritual life. If we ground our health choices in constant comfort, we risk sedating our bodies, losing vitality, and a chance to be healthier in the process. Many churches have shifted away from challenging teachings about sin, replacing them with messages that leave people unchanged and unchallenged. The objective, it seems, is to leave church feeling good about yourself, no matter the spiritual cost. Even worse, many of today's churches seem to teach that God's blessings are chiefly visible and in ease and personal comfort. Yet throughout Scripture, blessings rarely look like mere comfort. Rather, it looks like growth, transformation, and often suffering and struggle. If we continue to choose the path of least resistance, we cater to the voice that tells us to avoid hard things. The world, both spiritually and physically, suffers when people stop striving to improve, to step outside their comfort zones, and to discipline their lives for growth, health, and to follow Jesus in Jesus' footsteps. The challenge, then, is to resist sedation, both spiritual and physical. Spiritual life and physical health are both at risk when comfort becomes the highest goal. True health, like true faith, only grows when we regularly leave our comfort zones. This may mean choosing to exercise when settling onto the couch would be easier. This may mean choosing exercise when settling onto the couch would be easier, or preparing nourishing meals rather than opting for fast food convenience. It may also mean examining our lives and motives with honesty and humility, asking where we have grown too comfortable, and then committing to change for our own good. If we want real health and spiritual transformation, we have to be willing to endure some discomfort, to be convicted, and to grow through challenge. We are called not just to feel good, but to become good stewards of the bodies and lives we have been given. If we are always comfortable, something vital is missing. Real progress in both health and faith demands that we get up, face discomfort, and pursue conviction over sedation. Only then can we truly find physical and spiritual wellness.
Man, this is a good one, Dean.
Do we sound like a broken record?
We do.
Do hard things, because it's worth it.
We're made to suffer.
Yeah, yeah.
So as you were reading that, I thought about, you know, I've been on this journey since January, and I'll have a good breakdown of this health and wellness and everything sometime in December. But I'm starting to distill it down into four things, which I think you kind of hit on all these things. So it's funny how our views are, they've always been aligned, but it's like it's coming into focus. There's four things you can do to be a better person, and they're very simple. One, get 8 hours of sleep a night. Two, eat food that is close to the garden as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Three, get 3 hours of exercise a week. And four, spend an hour in prayer and reading your Bible every day.
Yeah.
Those are four very, very, very simple things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're not easy to accomplish, but they're very simple. But think about those four things. Society says do the opposite. On every one of them. That's you true. Said it. Our sleep, less sleep is a badge of honor.
Mm-hmm.
Sedentary lifestyle is the way to go. We celebrate unhealthiness now. Fast food, eat how you want to eat. That's celebrated. And spending time with God is not a priority at all, even in our Christian community nowadays. But if you will do those four things, this is kind of where my journey is going, is trying to distill it down into to a few simple things, and that's where I'm at today. And it really is simple. There's no need to complicate it more than that.
And, you know, I feel like that we are on the road to spiritual and physical sedation, as he put it. And if we don't have the desire to go out there and to get in some exercise and have the desire to spend time with God very purposefully, if we don't have that desire, we are on the road to being sedated. We should have that. Now, again, to your point, it's not always easy to get those things in, but we should have the desire to get those things in. And if we don't, we're already on the road to sedation.
But it takes, going back to our earlier comment, it takes being honest with ourselves, because most people that hear that, they'll say 7 hours a week in prayer and being in the Word with Christ. Look at your screen time.
Yeah.
I challenge everybody, turn that setting on your phone. I'm going to step out on a limb and say the average person listening to this is 5 to 7, 8 hours a day.
Yep.
When their screen is on.
Yep.
A day. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm asking for a week.
Yeah, it's true.
And not even what I'm asking for, what I know to be beneficial.
Yes.
3 hours of exercise a week. That doesn't have to, you don't have to be Dean.
Yeah.
Get out and walk for 3 hours a week. If you will do those four things, your life will radically look different. How do I know that? Because that's what I've been doing.
Yep.
And I'm not trying to put myself on some pedestal. It's just common sense.
Yeah.
And I think we have tried to complicate things. You know, every stuff has got to be complicated for there to be a market for it. Right?
Yep.
You look on social media and it's like, we've got this secret sauce. There is no secret sauce to what I just said. There isn't.
We just had in Mississippi, I don't know if you've read this story, but in Mississippi, their reading and math scores have gone up and they're number 5 in the country now. They were dead last. They're number 5. You know what they've done?
Something simple.
They've gone back to phonics. Just back to the absolute basics. And that's what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. The basic thing is get up and move, eat well, get good rest, spend time with God. Simple. Mm-hmm. Very simple. And you don't have to have, it doesn't have to be some, the hour a day you spend with God doesn't have to be some special Bible study.
No.
It just has to be intentional time.
We're in the ministry of Bible studies.
Yeah.
But pick a chapter and just start reading. That's
really
what I do.
Study it. Dig into it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pray about it. Think about it. Meditate on it. It doesn't have to be a crazy training plan. For many people, a very complicated training plan can be a good thing. I mean, if you're trying to run a particular PR, yes, you need a structured training plan. But getting out and walking 3 hours a week, from a health standpoint, that will bring you miles from where you currently are.
Yeah.
The distance between sedentary and walking 3 hours a week and walking 3 hours a week to some kind of PR, that first step is where all the benefit is.
Yeah.
The health benefit, the physical benefit, the cognitive benefit, the lack of depression. I mean, we've always said that exercising 3 days a week would dramatically, now I'm not a physician, but it will dramatically reduce depression in your life.
Dramatically, that's a good word. Yeah. Drastically.
Drastically.
Yeah.
But I need to go back to phonics, don't
it? It absolutely will. In short, we have to stop obsessing over comfort.
Yeah.
Because that's where we've gone. We're looking for everything to be easier in our lives. And you know what? That's a good thing. It is a good thing to want things to be easier. It is great. I was talking about yesterday, I was doing a little devotion. I was talking about how if I wanted to understand how to improve my VO2 max back when I was in high school, I had to do a research project to figure it out. Sure. And now I can find out in seconds on my phone. And that's a great thing. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with convenience. However, that makes it even more important today that we're intentional about doing the harder things, because back then we had to do hard things just to get by sometimes. We don't have to do them now.
We have to get back to doing the basic things. Because again, like I said, so many of us, and I've been in this category before, it's like I want to do that nuance thing, that new thing that's going to increase my VO2 max, and I've researched it and I've bought the right shoes to help me get there. Meanwhile, I'm missing half my workouts in the week.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got to get back to the base. And that is an example that bleeds over into every area of our life.
Yeah.
We want to become Billy Graham by doing this new age spiritual thing. Meanwhile, we're spending less than 10 minutes a week actually talking to God.
Yeah.
And same thing for our health. We want to get on this, you know, I want to eat a kale salad every afternoon for dinner. But meanwhile, we're eating breakfast and lunch at Chick-fil-A and McDonald's every day. It doesn't make sense. Do the big, smart, simple things, and you'll be far better.
Amen.
At Upward Sports, we're all about helping you on your fitness journey, but we also want to support you on your faith journey as well. You can sign up today for the self-paced Bible in a Year Challenge and listen every day as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. As a bonus, I also give you helpful tips of the day and finish with an encouraging quote in each episode. You must be an Upward Running member to participate in this exciting and edifying challenge. Sign up and start listening today. Every week I share a reason why running and or walking are so awesome. This week I want to talk about this. Running and or walking makes you feel alive. In several ways. The discomfort that you feel when you do that, when you run or when you walk, lets you know you're alive. The fact that you're usually outside when you do it makes you closer to God's creation. That makes you feel more alive. Getting in better shape will help you have a richer life experience. That makes you feel more alive. And even when you look in the mirror, and you see something that is more positive, makes you feel more alive. So I feel like running or walking, that makes you feel more alive than sitting on the couch or being active, right?
For sure.
Well, the Chicago Marathon was this past weekend, and it was great. I'm sure you sat and watched every minute.
I didn't, but one of our pastors was there. And
that's right.
I asked him, I said, so did you see Connor Mance? He said, well, by the time I got to the start line, there was a big screen, and Connor Mance was already at mile 5.
Yeah.
He said that was a little demoralizing.
he didn't have a good last 10K or so.
Who? Thomas?
Thomas.
Oh, yeah. He said by the halfway point, he realized he wasn't going to his goal, so he started, like there was a, he saw a Zulu flag, which is where he was part of his missionary journey there. So he like stopped and talked to them in Zulu, and they were all excited because he was speaking their language. He said, I just started having fun the last half of the race because he knew he was wanting to run like 3:15, 3:20.
Yeah.
And he just knew it wasn't going to happen. So he was still wound up running 340 and had a good time.
Which, yeah.
So he was happy with it. I mean, it wasn't what he wanted, but.
Well, good. I'm glad he was happy with it. Well, it was a fun race to watch. I just wish they would stop having these things on Sunday mornings. The race, I brought my iPad to church with me. And as I'm waiting for my, I was doing some setup stuff in the morning, and I've got my iPad there, and I'm kind of looking in the corner of my eye. And then as everybody's funneling into my classroom, I've got it up and I'm watching it. And they were at my, I don't know where they were exactly, but they were at like mile 18 when I had to close it. And it's like, golly, I can't watch them finish.
Yeah.
So it was a great race. There were two guys who were like two heavyweight fighters, John Carrere, who has run 202 a few times, and Jacob Caplimo, who is the world record holder in the half marathon, were both running. They seem to both indicate that they might go for the world record. And so they had the pacers set to run 60-30 for the first half, which is close to world record pace. Fast enough that if they ran the second half a little bit faster, they could get the world record. So we've never seen two guys on that kind of a pace before like that. But here they were. And through the first 5K, they were on 157 pace. They were smoking that first 5K. I don't know why they were going so fast. They were going with the wind. Maybe that had something to do with it. But they were.
So what happens in that situation if the Pacers were supposed to be on 2 hour pace and they were at 157 pace? Are the Pacers staying where they're supposed to be?
No, the Pacers were going that fast too. I don't know why. And maybe they were encouraging them to go that fast.
Okay.
But consequently, the Pacers dropped out before halfway. I mean, they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
They couldn't run fast enough. And they came through the first half in like 60-16 or something like that.
Yeah, you have to be a world-class runner just to be a pacer for those guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I, as fast as I am, I can't run 1 mile at their pace. So
that's insane.
It's crazy. But anyway, Jacob Kiplimo eventually pulls away, and he is on world record pace for 22 miles. And it looks like, apparently, by this time I had to turn it off, but it looked like he had a good shot at the world record. And but then, man, somebody dropped a piano on his back. And
isn't it crazy that the American record fell? And we're not even talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was going to get to that.
Well, but still, I mean, that's not the lead.
Yeah, no.
I mean, he was what? Was he fourth, Connor Mance?
He was fourth.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. But anyway, his last 3 miles were over 5 minutes. And so I know that sounds like it could be fast, but it's really slow by their standards. Mm-hmm. But I'm really excited about this because I feel like between those two guys and Sebastian Sawway, particularly Jacob Kiplimo and Sebastian Sawway, I think we got a shot at a world record if we can get them all together and have them push each other. So
you think we got a shot at sub two?
I do. Well, I mean, the world record's only 35 seconds away. Yeah. So you get the world record and you're probably going to get close.
Yeah. So when will those three guys run against each other?
I don't know.
What's coming up?
They're not scheduled to. So.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not scheduled to. London would probably be the next chance to do that.
Which is when?
It's in March, I want to say. But I don't know that they'll get them all together for that. But it would be great if they would, for sure. But Connor Mance went into this thinking he had a really good shot at breaking the American record, which was held by Khalid Kanucci. And sure enough, the record was 205.38. And Connor ran 204.43. And his splits,
which also broke the unofficial, which was Ryan, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Broke it too.
He ran 62.19 for the first half and 62.24 for the second half. That's some pretty good pacing.
Pretty even splits. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But he got in a panic because he ran the first mile in 4.32 by accident. Just, I guess, being excited. He was like, oh, no, I've blown it already. Yeah. And that was what went through his mind. But he had to calm down and relax. Otherwise, because he wanted to go through the first half in 62 flat. But that first mile kind of threw him off a little bit, and he wound up going through in 62:19. But anyway, he had thoughts of possibly running under 204. That was his ultimate goal. But the 204.43, he was very, very happy with and should be. And here's the crazy thing about it is he would have been the fastest to ever come out of the NCAA system to run a marathon in history. 204.43 would have been the fastest. But the fastest was 204.37 because there was a guy 6 seconds ahead of him, Alex Masai, who finished ahead of him. He's not an American, so that's why he didn't get the American record. So, yeah. So Alex Masai beat him by 6 seconds to get that NCAA record.
Wow.
So they ran together and pushed each other for that second half a good bit. It was cool. Anyway, good race. Congratulations to Connor Mance. Great sure. guy. Good. You know, he's Mormon, but he's a good fella.
Yeah.
Good fella. Our trivia question for this week. This is a simple one. So let's see how everybody does with this one. What is the most popular race distance in the United States?
By participation.
Yes. What is the most popular race distance in the United States? I would say that's the same answer, participation and number of races. Would be the same. You got to be a member to win. Send that to dean@upward.org. Be the first one to send that in, and you will win $20 off in the store. Our motivational thought of the week comes from Matthew McConaughey. I was watching a movie with him in it, and this is a great quote. He says, "It's no fun to sit down and talk about what exercise has to do with life. Go drip that sweat. Run until we're fatigued, to where the mind can't ponder the past or the future. Well, then you've got something. It's fun to feel healthy, and it's fun to feel good."
Well put.
That's a good one, isn't it? I like the way he puts stuff.
Yeah.
He's an interesting fellow. And he got an interesting story. He was on a podcast recently that...
he's been on a few podcasts lately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got an interesting story, for sure. For sure. He's an optimist. He and Jerry will get along, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we appreciate you tuning in. And until next week. May God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.